The images we have of Warsaw during the German invasion are thanks to one man, Julian Bryan, the only neutral reporter left in the city 7 days after the war began on September 1st, 1939. His historic World War II newsreel, Siege, has just been released for the first time on DVD, and I'm joined now by Sam Bryan, the son of Julian, to tell us about the Oscar-nominated footage and the amazing story behind it. Welcome to our show.
I'm honored. Thank you.
How many newsreels were being made at this point in the war?
Of the war? Of the
real war at this point, but were there a lot of newsreel reporters out there in Europe at the time?
Probably, and there were some in Warsaw the first few days of September before my father got there, and they all left. They left with the American embassy, with the Polish government, so that when my father got there September 7th, there were no journalists on the ground.
And how did he manage to get in?
Well, of course, a flip answer is by train, but he, in fact, the serious answer is by train. It was the only way to go. He'd been in doing film work. He did educational films, but he did travel films, travel lectures, which was fairly honorable occupation in the 30s. And he was in Switzerland and Holland. He sensed war. It wasn't any magic to figure out that something pretty disastrous was on the way. And he didn't take the wrong train at the wrong time. He knew what he was doing, but he didn't know that the government and everybody would have left. So he went through Romania, got on the train, and found himself outside of Warsaw because the train station itself had been bombed, and essentially the only journalist.
But you say he had not done newsreel
shooting before? He was not a newsreel guy. A number of people have called him, whether March of Time or Time Magazine with Stills and other have called him their employee. He was a fiercely freelance person. And number one was always to do these travel lecture films. He was fascinated with people. And I think an answer to probably a later question of yours, well, what did he find and what did he do? It was the people on the ground of Warsaw that he was fascinated with. So he had done some March of Time material and sold material for March of Time programs. But no, he was not headed to do the scoop, which of course it became.
And maybe that's why this was so much more effective, because he was looking for things that a regular reporter might not have looked for.
He'd been there before. He'd been in Poland. He had a little feel for the country, and he'd done some footage in 1936, which is invaluable as a historical record today. He went in not knowing whether he might be arrested, as he was stopped at the border and stopped a number of times. His best foreign language was German. That was not the best language to have in Warsaw as a foreigner, looking like a foreigner. And instinctively, once in a while, he would say, instead of English, because that wasn't making his point, he'd say something in German. His American passport apparently was accepted and got him through.
And what shape was the city in at this point? This is days into the siege.
The siege.
But the Germans had not yet taken over the city.
They had not, and he got out in time before they took over the city. But he was there for 2 weeks of fierce bombing from the air. And so day after day, buildings would be destroyed. He would be able to record the bombing of a hospital, not a military target, a potato field. A church, and the people's reaction to that. And I think it's the story that's so important and that people remember is it's the people on the ground. He wasn't with the German pilots. That some of that footage and some of the newsreel material that we've seen today was German material of the pilots and some shots from the air, which today are dramatic to see. And in fact, at the Uprising Museum in Warsaw today, there is apparently just opening a 3D movie of flying over Warsaw in September 39, I guess all digitally recreated. And I hope to see it in the next month, but it's
all based on German footage.
They were shooting to
show the glory of what they were doing.
Sure. And that's not what's in the 10-minute newsreel Siege.
Yeah, no, it's rather sad and horrifying. In fact, I gather when the film was put together, they kept some things out because it was just too strong for American audiences.
Well, it was shown as a newsreel in this 10-minute format. Yes, the assumption is it would have been shown as during matinees as well as evening programs. We're talking, it's so interesting, the comparison of your earlier guests here and talking about 21st century and things that were only 70 years away. But my father could not communicate with my mother during those 2 weeks any way at all. No phone, no telegraph, nothing.
And he didn't have digital equipment to rely on either. So did he bring all of the film in with him?
Very heavy 35-millimeter cameras. The one reason he went from Switzerland and Holland was that he had time, a little money, and 6,000 feet of 35-millimeter motion picture film. And so his instinct was, hey, I've got the equipment, I've got the film, let's go and see what I can film.
He shoot all 6,000 feet?
He did. He not only shot all 6,000 feet, survived during those 2 weeks to do it, he got all 6,000 feet out and ultimately to New York to be put into not just this 10-minute newsreel, but I think it's important to know, as exciting it is to talk about the fact that this is now available on DVD and the world can get it. But he shot and was a travel lecture guy, as I've said. What he ended up with was an 80-minute lecture that he could went around the country, and it could be Carnegie Hall, and it could be one of the major universities, and speak for several days with his travel film of Poland, which included so much more of this than your question about bodies and bloodshed.
I want to know where the rest of this footage is, because what we have is extraordinary.
It's a great question, and it gives me the chance to really plug the people that are responsible for this all the way around. And that's the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., that I've negotiated with just this century, since the early years, so that they in Washington have all the 35-millimeter motion picture film that he shot, but also all the still film and negatives, and some recent material when he went back in 1959. That material has been lovingly taken care of and restored and copied. So researchers today, and in fact Polish filmmakers are making use of it right now, can go to the Holocaust Museum, can get excerpts, can get long sections of things that we would might call outtakes that were not in, certainly not in the 10-minute newsreel.
My guest is Sam Bryan, and we're talking about the DVD release of a film made by his father, Julian Bryan, World War II newsreel called Siege. And we don't, even though the Holocaust Museum has this footage, there's really nothing much about the Warsaw Ghetto. The great film footage about that was actually shot by the Germans. There's another film coming out, I don't know if you know about that, that is kind of shocking that the Germans would have shot it because it's such an indictment of them. But this whole thing is an indictment of war and of attacking people who really are unprepared for the kind of thing that the Germans were doing to them.
And absolutely innocent. One of the strong things, and people ask the question, what's memorable? What do you remember of the people and what was good about what was shown or happening? Well, part of it is just daily life went on, and that's what I think my father captured so well. So photographs of people simply trying to survive, whether it's standing in a bread line, which is tough, or whether it's just one of the scenes of working outside, and that was daily life, washing, doing, airing the bedclothes. It happened to be outdoors because the house was gone. The apartment building was bombed.
And we see houses burning. Are there any scenes that stick with you in particular?
Well, I guess I grew up always knowing about a wonderful woman named Kazimira Mika, who was a young girl, and the still photos of her in the potato field right outside of Warsaw, over the body of her sister, who had been machine gunned from the air by the Germans. Not a bomb hitting from way up on high, and not an accident. It was deliberately killing peasants. And that the still photographs of her and the photograph, there's only one shot in the movie Siege, but it's so strong that the still photograph, I think, was the first record that really got out in 1939 and then in the newsreel. To see there this innocent young woman having lost her sister.
There was no government, you say. The Polish government had left.
The government.
So who was running the city?
The mayor. The mayor did not leave. Stefan Stasinski was still there. He's a hero to this day. He disappeared and died during the war. probably in a concentration camp and was captured. But he stayed in the entire, and the reason my father got permission and was able to do much of this film is the mayor was able to give him permit and said, yes, you go and you can do whatever you can to try to get some pictures and get them out.
Any idea what happened to that woman you were talking about?
I met her a year ago.
Oh, so she did survive.
She survived.
What about the other people?
She is one of many survivors, and I'm planning and hoping—
And stayed in Poland?
Yep. Yes. Some, of course, did not.
And she's got to be in her 90s now.
She's 80-something. Mm. She's as gracious and lovely as she seemed to be as a little girl.
Well, I would assume that most of the people in Warsaw wanted your father to record this because they wanted the world to know what was going on.
Exactly. And then that's what worked, is that he saw the newsreel a year later, saw Siege subtitled into Spanish when he was working in South America. So it moved around the world.
Well, you said that he managed to get the 6,000 feet of film out. And I'm sure he tried to get his equipment out as well. How did he manage to do that?
You said
it was hard enough getting into Warsaw.
He gave up on the equipment. He abandoned the equipment there. One thing that's quite interesting is that Kodak Lab was running. It's like all the stories of what people, daily life. Newspaper boys delivered newspapers when there were some. People had kept shop open when they could. And at the risk of the rattle sound, one of the stories that comes out about how he did it was he had boxes, suitcases, but he also had gas masks because everybody in Warsaw had a gas mask.
So you've carried to our studio one of those gas masks in a plastic shopping bag.
It's what
is
I
that the
no absolutely not. But I bought it to my wife's horror last year in Krakow in a market. And it's in the style of, and seems to be looking just like the ones that that's a photograph of Polish women with the mask. It turned out, and every story came out, the gas masks were unnecessary during the siege. There was no, fortunately, no mustard gas, no bad biological warfare. It was shrapnel, and everybody should have had a helmet, but didn't, had the gas mask. So as people left, and as my father went out toward the end of September, with a Swedish delegation and with others, a number of them had taken gas masks. And the film had already been processed in motion picture and still photos had been processed at the working Kodak lab in Warsaw. And there's this wonderful sequence in the film, in the DVD, in the film Siege, of the workers at the lab moving the film from A to B into the wash after the development. And all those development tanks were bombed within minutes. And he got everything out. So he wasn't bringing out exposed footage. He was bringing out developed footage. But the still films fit into what one still can find as a gas mask. And I believe the story that lots of rolls of films were in people's gas masks.
In those tubes.
In the tubes of the gas mask.
And how soon after he got out was this edited and being shown in the United States?
He got... took the slow boat back. We're still talking about 1939. No airplane travel that he dared come back on. So we got back into New York and made an arrangement with RKO Pathé to do the 10-minute newsreel. Also with Time Look magazine and Life magazine for the still photos. By 1940, there are reviews of Siege being shown.
So, and what kind of response was it getting? Were people horrified? It seems to me it must have had a real impact because a lot of the newsreels that followed seemed to follow in its format.
Well, there was a format already made. March of Time is about to have its 75th anniversary, and you might want to have some people here in the next month who, like my father, were involved with March of Time, and there's going to be screenings of one of his September 1st at Museum of Modern Art. So there was a tradition of newsreels out there. But the New York Times on February in 1940 reviewed a George Sanders film with Bela Lugosi in two or three paragraphs, but coupled with that at the Rialto Theater is this long paragraph recommending and praising Siege. It's a grim and somber record on the war's effect on the population, narrated matter-of-factly, photographed simply and objectively by Julian Bryan. That's
Did he go back?
To Warsaw?
Yeah.
The most important trip back, which is still part of the heritage, is 20 years later. And he filmed, that's how I knew about Kazimiera Mika, about the young boy Zygmunt who had tried to escape, help with his sister, a cousin's canary cage. Again, he is alive and well today. And during a very short time in 1958 and 59, he was able to find about 30 of the survivors.
Now, we don't have time for me to go into the process that got this film restored, but it does look quite beautiful.
Well, that's what to me is exciting today, and that in this century, even with your earlier guests, we can talk about archival footage, and it works.
It's available online, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and my great thanks to Sam Bryan for talking about the DVD release of his father's footage of Warsaw called The Siege.